Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So even in the midst of all of the protests going on around the country, all of the people in the streets demanding an end to police violence, over the weekend, another video uncovered in Phoenix of a guy who evidently was sleeping in his car in his driveway. Someone reported that someone looked like him or sounded like him or whatever. And, you know, the video shows, you know, a bunch of cops surrounding the car and then basically executing the guy in his car. Now, did he have a gun while he was in the car? Did he? Who knows? But you go, the guy's sleeping in his own driveway. Now, it's been years since I've done this. But if the police were to come to my driveway every time I fell asleep in the car when I was younger. Wow. I mean, it's just mind blowing. And to see this kind of stuff happen time and time and time again, something seriously wrong, which caught my attention. The most recent article by our good friend Will Bunch is I can't stop thinking about the beauty of Elijah McClain and the benign evil of the cops who killed him. His most recent column over at the Philly Daily News. That's why I've asked Will Bunch to come talk with us. Columnist there at the Philly Daily News. Will, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So, you know, I'm looking at this stuff, and I read your article, and you know, it's one of those, you know, the more you read about these things, the more you just, you don't know what to do and the anger and all that. You know, but I completely identified with what you were saying about, you know, that, you know, this idea that, you know, the anger, the frustration and all of that. I don't know where to go with that.
Yeah, I mean that's basically why I wrote this piece, you know, because, you know, we've had, you know, I mean, year after year, we've had so many of these killings, and they really risen to the forefront this year. And each one of them, Rick, is, you know, is awful in its own way. You know, Breonna Taylor, who was a EMT who devoted her life to helping people, was sleeping in her own apartment, and these no-knock drug officers who actually, it just came out today, maybe were, you know, clearing the neighborhood for a gentrification project, basically, came in and shot her 8 times. Yeah, I mean, that's heartbreaking. I mean, we all know about George Floyd and just how insane and nonsensical, you know, him being chokeholded and strangled for 8 minutes, how crazy that was. I mean, each one, you know, and as a journalist, that's the point I was trying to make in the column, you know, as a journalist, I mean, you're trained professionally you have to keep some sense. I mean, you don't want to devoid yourself totally of emotions on one hand. But on the other hand, you want to be able to control them, too. You don't want to be too sad. You don't want to be too angry. But this case in Aurora, Colorado, with this Elijah McClain, this 23-year-old man, who was just the gentlest soul you could possibly think of, who, you know, was a vegetarian and wouldn't kill flies because he can never harm an animal. And he taught himself to play the violin. And on his lunch break from his job, he would go to this animal shelter and serenade the stray animals who didn't have homes yet with his violin. I mean, that's the kind of person he was. Everybody knew him, just said he was a kind, gentle person, but he was different. He was a real introvert, you know, and he apparently sounds like was the first person to admit that, you know, he was just a different kind of person. And one night last August, you know, as a favor for his brother, he ran out to the convenience store to get his brother a can of iced tea. And because he had anemia, he was wearing a ski mask, even though it was an August night. It was not super, super hot, but it was kind of unusual to wear a ski mask on an August night. And he was being himself, you know, he was kind of walking funny, flailing his arms, because the guy was a character, right? And first of all, somebody had to call 911, right? You know, who's this person? You know, he didn't say black person, but, you know, Elijah was an African-American, obviously. You know, there's this person with a ski mask. He looks a little sketchy. He's waving his arms around. These cops come, and because of his, you know, shyness and introversion, Elijah just freaks out when these cops come. You know, he doesn't want He doesn't want to be touched. He doesn't want to be stopped. The more they try and detain him, the more he kind of freaks out, and it just escalates. And then the scenes that we've seen so many times, right? They throw him to the ground. They use this chokehold, which really, why it's still legal is totally beyond me. And you know, he's screaming. You know, he's yelling at these cops. You know, I just don't like to be touched. I'm different. You know, I'm not that kind of person. I wouldn't touch a fly. You know, needless to say, he was unarmed, and it's just so infuriating. It's just so infuriating. You know, that I mean, you know, as I said in the column, I mean, he died because he was black. He died because he was a different kind of person, and a lot of people who have raised children who are kind of different in their own ways have really identified with Elijah's story, and that's understandable. Mm-hmm. And he died because, you know, this police department in Aurora, Colorado, which is just kind of a historically a cesspool, you know, has no respect for people like him. This is the same, but I'm just going to add one more thing, which is, I mean, this is the same police department, you might remember, where they had that horrific movie theater shooting during the Batman.
Yeah, I was gonna bring that up.
Yeah, the Dark Knight, or I guess that's what it was called, in 2012, and this crazy person with wild red hair named James Holmes went into that movie theater and killed 12 people, and I think he wounded like six. I mean, it was, you know, he had the automatic weapons, and he killed 12 people, wounded 50 people in the theater. He had a shotgun, a semi-automatic rifle, and a Glock on him. And the police found him in the parking lot, and they arrested him calmly without any incident. And yet here's this 23-year-old introverted violin player who happened to be black, and they threw him on the ground and choked him to death. And he was also injected with ketamine in a very strong dose, you know, and died on, you know, basically died when they took him to the hospital. Just an unbelievable story. Just so infuriating, so heartbreaking, you know, and I just had to write about it. I mean, it's, you know, anyway, I'm sorry, go ahead. But that's kind of my description of what happened.
No, I mean, the sad reality is, you know, and you look at, as you pointed out, you know, the guy who went in and shot up the theater, they took without incident, much like the guy who shot up the African-American church down in South Carolina, basically took him for lunch.
Yeah, they stopped at Burger King, right, or something.
Yeah,
like that.
I mean, yeah. So, you know, when people say there's no racism, I go, I don't know. I think there's some pretty good examples to go, here it is.
Yeah, we it's right. It's like science, right? We have our control subjects. You know, we've seen how white people who are incredibly dangerous have been treated by these officers, and then we see how black people who really are doing nothing wrong and pose no threat are treated. And you know, whenever I write something, I always hope to have kind of a broader point. While I wrote it partly just to kind of work through my own like grief and anger at this case, but I also did have a point, which was that, you know, we're having this national conversation right now about how to reform the police, and you know, we're talking about, well, we could have a law that bans chokeholds, and it is banned in some jurisdictions. You know, we should increase training, you know, and make sure that they receive even more training about racial and implicit bias. But you look at these troubled departments like the Aurora, Colorado Police Department, and it's not a lack of training, and it's not the laws that regulate them so much. It's just the entire culture, you know.
Right.
You just have a culture of people who, you know, not only do they have this kind of bias towards white supremacy, but also, you know, just their attitude about what their job is and what their responsibility is. And it's not to serve the community. You know, they just have a mentality that's very authoritarian. I mean, when you're a police officer, you're an authority. Who's going to want to take on that kind of job and authority? And authoritarian, right? You know, I mean, that's just human nature. Just like journalists by nature are people who question authority. You know, I mean, we all sort of have psychologies that kind of attract us to our career. But you know, in this case, the way we've developed policing, the way we've developed these departments, and now the way we've staffed them with these individuals is just broken beyond repair. And, you know, and so when people talk about defunding the police, I mean, look, we have to have public safety. I mean, you know, we're also talking about the fact that there are too many murders in this country, and you can't not have a system to promote public safety, because public safety is an issue. But the way we do it now with these police departments, who comprise the people who see themselves as warriors rather than the guardians of public safety, it just needs to be replaced from the ground up. And I think this Elijah McClain case is Exhibit A that just proves that.
And the other part of it is you know, also this thus versus them mentality, and also the military hierarchy of the whole thing. I mean, and the fact that, you know, they give extra points if you were in the military. And look, I don't want to, you know, put down military, but, you know, there's a different mindset to being a soldier than to being a policeman. Soldiers and militaries kill things and blow things up. People who are in law enforcement, generally not supposed to do that.
Yeah, and also the other thing, and again, this gets back to, you know, do we change the laws and put in new rules, you know, about having laws that would require officers to report misconduct by other officers. I mean, that is just so against the culture, you know, that they're trained to. You know, it's the culture of the military, it's the culture of the police, it's the culture of, you know, fraternities in college. You know, it's just brotherhood, and you don't report on the other, the thin blue line, you know. And so I think you can pass all the laws you want saying that, you know, you need to report misconduct by your peers, and it's just not going to happen. I mean, you could see, you know, I don't want to drill too down into the small details of this Elijah McClain case, but you could see on the body cam that exists, or the audio tapes that exist, you know, they're trying to formulate their story in the seconds after they realize this has gone wrong. You know, he fought back to this incredible strength. But when you see the pictures of Elijah, he's this really wispy 140-pound kid. I mean, there's no way that he could have overpowered three police officers the way they described. But that's, you know, again, that's the mentality that they formulate this story, and they protect each other. They've got their police union contracts, and look, we're all pro union to some degree, but there is, I would argue that there is something with difference with police unions. I mean, police have an ability that steel workers and miners don't have, which is the ability to commit state sanctioned violence. And I mean, the state can't function unless we can keep that under control. And we've ceded control of that to these police unions and their procedures. And there's got to be a fix for that.
Yeah, but is it the union's fault, or is it, you know, just the nature of having that us versus them? Because before there were police unions, you still had that same kind of culture. You go back and you read, you know, the stories of the past, the same kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right. It's a problem because, I mean, part of the reason for having a union is to protect the various rights of workers, including the right to not be fired unfairly, you know, and certainly, you know, I'm a journalist and I'm a member of a union, the News Guild. And if, heaven forbid, my bosses tried to fire me and it was a specious reason, you know, my union would go in and protect me. But the whole system, I mean, the system is negotiated between the unions and the politicians. And it needs to be, if the politicians really want to reduce police brutality, they need to negotiate more toughly.
No, and that's the key. Because when people say, well, you can't fire union people. Yes, you can. The only protection union members have is the right to due process. The right to have a procedure. You can't just be fired at will. And what you have are lazy administrators. You have lazy management. And in this case, we have lazy politicians who feed into this. So, again, I come back to the politicians who we elect and all of the things that have been going on for the last 30 years, 50 years, 70 years, you know, 200 years as the problem.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I mean, historically, politicians have been very afraid of not having the police unions support when they run for re-election. I mean, it's interesting because the reality in recent years, if you look at, like, you know, open races where the police unions make endorsements, they're really nowhere near as powerful as they once were, you know.
Right.
And, and certainly in a city like my city, Philadelphia, for example, you know, we elected a district attorney, Larry Krasner, who is despised by the police union, and they were powerless to stop his election. So, I mean, the politics are changing, and hopefully, you know, the arbitration rules that are stacked too heavily in favor of, you know, cops who commit acts of brutality, I mean, we're going to see changes in that, I think, but it's not going to come overnight. Obviously, it's a process.
So let me ask you a last line of questioning, because
we
beat up on the police unions, we beat up on the politicians, and rightly so. But ultimately, doesn't it come back down to us? Because when in the few cases where these cops who do these things are put on trial, they're let off. And the case that keeps popping into my mind, and it wasn't a racial thing. There was a white woman who was a police officer somewhere in our area here in central PA, who shot a guy in the back like 4 or 5 times. He was laying face down in the snow with his hands under his face. Completely, no way this guy could have done anything. She claimed fear for her life. The jury let her off. So ultimately, doesn't it come back to us?
Yeah, it does. And I think the knowledge that they had that level of public support for so many years is something that empowered the police, you know, to be even more aggressive. But I would say, I mean, you have to look at what's happened the last month, and, you know, these crowds that have marched through, you know, Philadelphia, they've marched through Harrisburg. They've
marched, good on them.
You know, they marched on Pittsburgh, you know, and it's been, certainly there've been a lot of black and brown people at these marches, but there've also been huge contingents of white people, and they tend to be, well, a lot of them are under 35. A lot of them are the parents, you know, who hated Trump and joined the Trump resistance, and now they're out there marching with their kids against police violence. And you're seeing this broader coalition, and I think over time you're going to see that attitude reflected in the public. So maybe the next time, you know, I think the feds now are looking at this Elijah McClain case because the cops initially weren't prosecuted. But, you know, let's say there was a civil rights indictment of these police officers. You know, a jury next year might, especially if you get some young people on there, might look at it differently than a jury, say, in the 1990s might have looked at a case.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, yeah, so we'll have to see. But, no, you're right. I mean, the police, much has been given to the police in this country in terms of respect and public opinion for decades, you know, and we're starting to see that erode because they've abused that, you know, what they've abused that privilege they've been given.
Yeah. I mean, it's, again, I go back to, it's the whole system, because it seems like it's, you know, every community, you know, no matter where you go, it's that same kind of mindset. So it's, you know, not just a few bad apples. And I hate that analogy, because it's not.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, the whole expression is one bad apple spoils the whole bunch, you know, and again, I mean, that really gets back to culture again, right? You know, but it is just a culture that's just really broken at this point. And we're going to have some hard conversations about how we as a society, and you're right, all of us, you know, how all of us can get involved in fixing that.
Yeah. There you go. Excellent piece. I hope folks will take a look at it. We'll make sure we get it out on social media. As always, Will, you do great work. I appreciate you taking time for us.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Always good stuff. Thank you so much. Will Bunch, national columnist there for the Philly Daily News. We'll make sure we get links out to the story so you can take a look at it. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.